You're listening to the Build Assets Online podcast. Learn how you can build a diverse and sustainable income online from two brothers who actually do it. Now, here are your hosts, Mike and Joe.
All right. What's going on, everyone? Joe and Mike back from buildassetsonline.com. We have a very special guest with us today, Tiffany Thomas, a.k.a. Your Wealth Mentor. Tiffany, how's it going? So glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Cool. So if you are a regular Build Assets Online viewer or listener, you know that we talk about creating online businesses as the path to financial freedom. But really, that's only one part of the equation. And so we're trying to have more guests on the show that talk about the other part, which is the investing outside of online business part. So what we're going to talk about today with Tiffany is stock market investing for beginners. And we're also going to talk about a bit about real estate because she does both things. And Tiffany, if I'm correct, that's kind of the best path, you think, to wealth is stock market, real estate. You know, that's what people should focus on.
Yeah, I love those two investments for sure. And that's what helped me become financially free. So yeah, that's what I would say, real estate and the stock market.
Okay, cool. So to get started, tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of how you got started with all this and, where you've worked in the past, kind of your journey to get to where you're at today and, where are you at today, just so people have a little bit of a background.
Yeah, for sure. So I used to work a 9-to-5. I was doing online marketing for a food storage company, a freeze-dried food company. And I liked working there for a while, but toward the end, I wasn't super happy. And I had purchased my first property quite a while before that, back in 2005, actually, and had some roommates living with me. So I had a little bit of extra income that way. And I decided to get more into real estate a little bit later. I had a friend who was really successful with real estate investing. And so I asked him a bunch of questions about how to kind of get started with rental properties. And I also had a boss at that food storage company that was successful with real estate too. So I asked him a bunch of questions and I ended up purchasing a second property in 2015, which was just strictly a rental property. So I just had the 20% down payment and got renters in there and started creating a little more cash flow that way too. And then decided to purchase a third property. And I moved into that property and got roommates there and then rented out my previous property, just left my roommates there and replaced me essentially. So once I had those properties, I just kept seeing like benefits from investing in real estate, and I had gotten started in the stock market too. And I got started a little bit later. Like I was investing in a 401k in the traditional investments, but I bought my first individual stock when I was 33 in 2013. So after I did that and then just bought a few more stocks and started doing more research about investing in the stock market, I started investing more in that and opening up a Roth IRA. And, I had a brokerage account too that I was investing in that. I was buying individual stocks in that. Anyway, so I wasn't really happy at my job. So I decided to quit my job and just kind of do my passion, which is helping people learn to manage their money better and learn to invest it to become financially free. And so I started my business and just kind of worked on that along with managing my own rental properties. And yeah, just going forward, I ended up purchasing another property, which put me at financial freedom at age 38, and then became a millionaire at 40, which I was super excited about. So that just barely happened. But yeah, I just saw that potential of investing in real estate and the stock market to become financially free, to essentially kind of retire early and really pursue my passions and just, yeah, live a more fulfilled life. So that's kind of my journey in a nutshell.
So when you say financially free, are you defining that as you have enough passive income coming in through people paying you rent and I guess maybe even stocks so that you're paying all of your expenses each month, they're all covered?
Right. Yep. That's exactly it. Living the lifestyle that I desire without having to work for it or rely on someone else for money. Mm-hmm.
Do you factor in stocks into that sort of income each month? Or is that something you do as like more just put it there and hold strategy?
It's more just put it there and hold. So when I bought my fourth property, I ended up taking out a bunch of stocks and putting that toward the down payment. So I kind of switched around investments that way, but I'm not relying on the stocks for income right now.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I think that's like, I mean, we talked a bit in the pre-show and I was just basically saying how I know nothing about the stock market and said some pretty stupid stuff, but usually I think my problem with it is, you know, in our industry, we have people who claim that they're making all this money doing, you know, different Shopify, like drop shipping stores. And you see them on Instagram, like driving around in Lambos and doing all this stuff. And it's really mostly a facade because we know a lot of these people and we know this industry very well. And so I kind of see the same thing in the stock market with people saying, to me, it seems like gambling, a big part of the stock market where you're throwing a bunch of money in, hoping it goes up and then cashing out. So is that part of what you do or are you doing something else?
So I'm investing in the stock market, but I take a more long-term approach. So I'm not like trying to make money really fast in the stock market and pull it out when it's high and then put it back in. I'm more about finding a good company to invest in or even a really good index fund and just continuing to invest in that over time. And one thing to remember about the stock market is that it goes up and down, but always goes up over time. So I don't really look at it as gambling so much just because I know that it always comes back up over time, over that long term.
And can I ask, so the way I understand it, and that's kind of my view on it as well, which is why I invest in the stock market, you know, basically in retirement accounts mostly. But the reason for that, and you can clarify if I'm correct, is because you're taking money, which is basically worthless in itself because, you know, they're going to print more money, there's going to be inflation, and you're putting that money into stocks. But at the end of the day, those stocks are real companies. They're real assets that over time, you know, will outgrow inflation because of their economic activities and, you know, should outgrow inflation by quite a bit. Am I correct on that? Or is there something I'm missing?
No, you're correct on that. And that's a great way to look at it. Like, you are investing in actual companies that are growing over time and expanding their businesses. So yeah, when you look at it that way and think, okay, I'm investing in these businesses that will grow over time, then that's putting my money to work for me without me having to work for it. So yeah, it's really a really good mindset to have that you're actually purchasing companies and not just throwing your money somewhere, but you're actually investing it in good companies.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, what I was alluding to before, someone chatted in the YouTube live and they said that's day trading. So yes, there are definitely day traders that go and they're doing penny stocks or they're throwing a lot of money into one company, hoping it goes up. And so that's kind of what I figure is more of a gambling approach. And, you know, I've heard people say, yes, you know, the stock market goes up over time. But my concern is that I'm investing in a company that may not go up over time. If I'm doing something that's not, say, like an index fund or whatever the term is for, you know, a bunch of like a shared portfolio, are you investing in individual companies? And how do you do that carefully enough to know that it will go up over time?
Yeah. So when you're investing in an index fund, it makes it really easy because there's a whole bunch of companies inside of one index fund. And for example, I like the total stock market index fund. So it follows the total stock market. So companies that have gone bankrupt will fall out of that index fund. And since you're invested in a whole bunch of different companies with that one fund, then that stock or that index fund continues to rise over time, because the bad companies or bad stocks are falling out of that index fund. And then as far as when you're choosing just one stock to buy, one company to invest in, I personally prefer doing more stable companies. I'm not as risky that way in doing kind of startup companies. So I look at more larger companies like Amazon, for example, or Google or Apple, or, you know, large companies like that, that are more stable. And you can continue to just kind of keep your eye on those companies over time and think, okay, are they still performing well in the market, or are they starting to decline a little bit? Should I get out of that stock? And that's the thing when you're investing in individual stocks, you want to keep an eye on those companies to make sure that they are continuing to grow over time. And that way you can say, okay, yes, I still believe in this company, even if their stock price falls a little bit. But if you can still see that they're doing well in the market, then you can keep that stock. But if you start to see a downtrend and the management goes bad or whatever happens, then you can just, you know, exit out of that company and to something else. Yeah, go ahead.
So I guess the idea is, it's interesting you brought up Google, because I haven't researched it too much, but this is something that we kind of monitor kind of closely, because a big part of what we do is spend money on Google advertising and also do search engine optimization. So I kind of like to keep a close eye on what's going on with Google. So I don't know much about it yet, because I'm just seeing the headlines about it today, but apparently there's some like antitrust stuff going on with them. But I guess to Mike's point, you know, that would make me a little bit worried if I have a lot of money in Google, because you never know with one company, as solid as it is, there could be like some sort of sweeping government action or something, you know, something crazy like that, where it could just throw the whole thing off. So when it comes to investing for beginners, what is that why you're start, like how do you balance, say you're just a regular person, you're working a job, or you're starting an online business like we recommend, and you're just ending up with this a little bit of extra money. How do you kind of reconcile that? Do you start with index funds and then slowly throw a little bit extra into companies you believe in? Or like, how do people do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, that's exactly what I would say. For beginners, I would just start with an index fund. And that way you can just keep it really, really simple and just buy that one fund. And then you're invested in a whole bunch of different stocks and you don't have to keep your eye on that fund. And that's just another reason why I like that total stock market index fund, just because there's so many stocks in it that it's not really a high risk index fund. And excuse me, you can get started it's called an ETF, an exchange traded fund version of an index fund. So that way you can start with a little bit less money, maybe around, I think it was like $175 last time I checked or something. So you can get started with a little amount of money and just continue to invest in that same index fund or ETF over time. And then as you become more familiar or more comfortable with the stock market, then you could start to add a few of your favorite companies that you can see are doing well in the market. And yeah, I wouldn't keep the majority of your money in individual stocks, just because that is more risky. And, you know, those companies could turn around pretty fast and then you would lose a ton of your money. But yeah, for beginners, I would just get started with that index fund and then continue to invest in that over time and just keep it really simple.
Yeah, I like the, you know, I do invest in index funds every year. Just simply for the tax advantages of it, you know, doing the IRA or whatever, my accountant will be like, hey, Mike, you know, add $9,500 to your SEP IRA and you'll save, you know, this much. So I usually just try and max it out per whatever the tax advantage is. But to me, I feel like that's a good thing to have stashed away long-term. I think our goal is, you know, we want to generate a huge lump sum of cash so that we can achieve financial freedom that way. You know, we can pay off our houses and then, you know, figure out what we want to do from there. So how long was it between when you first started working and then started investing and stuff and then actually were able to be financially free?
So I started getting more serious about investing probably like in 2014, when I was 34. So about 4 years later, I was able to become financially free. So it went pretty fast. Yeah. And I know that doesn't always happen. And I'm a pretty big saver anyway. So I, you know, was able to purchase properties because I had saved a lot of money. But once I started investing, in the stock market and just making my money work for me rather than having it sit in a savings account. Then it just kind of, it compounded over time, like that compound interest that you see. And I was able to become financially free pretty quickly once I really started focusing in on that and realizing that it was a possibility. I don't know if you guys have heard of the FIRE community, the Financial Independence Retire Early community. But I found that community and was like, oh my goodness, people are retiring super early. And so, yeah, just finding that, it just helped me, become more passionate about it and really focus in on it. And just really get serious about my investing.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
go ahead.
You know, so I want to get into like more of the rental and real estate stuff. I think for us, well, obviously, you know, we don't have jobs. Like, we are able to cover our bills and, you know, very much then some doing different online businesses and trying to really just establish like a little private equity company for ourselves using different websites. And so that's what I guess you could say we have financial freedom in that, like, everything is paid. But I think we're looking towards, our end goal is being able to pay off all of our outstanding, you know, houses and cars and all that, and then have enough cash just to put into like the index funds and stock market, whatever, so that we can apply the 4% rule and then just draw that indefinitely. And then that way we can do nothing forever.
Yes. I think what you guys are doing is great. Like, creating all of these businesses to create that income. Definitely. I think that's awesome.
I think with the rental stuff, obviously you hear about people doing that. I always felt like it was something that there was a pretty big barrier to entry and like knowledge gap to get into, because for one, you have to make a down payment. So I don't know, you know, what things cost by you, but we're in New Jersey, terribly expensive, good amount of cash saved up just to do that. And then, you know, you may make a couple $100 a month passively. So there's like definitely a lot of nuance to it. So did you have a lot of cash saved up by the time you bought your first rental property?
I had some cash saved up, and yeah, when I bought my first rent, well, so my first official rental, I did put 20% down. So yeah, I did have a lot of cash saved up for that. But when I bought my next property, I moved into that property. So I only had to put 5% down instead of that 20%, which is typical for a rental property. So you can lower your entrance into real estate if you're moving into the property, and you can put less money down. And since I'm single, I was able to also, you know, put roommates in there. And have cash flow that way. And that's, I mean, how I was able to easily move out of my first property and just leave them there and then replace me. But so if you are able to move into the property, you can definitely do it for less. But the thing is, like, once you get started, it becomes easier and easier over time.
Yeah, I would agree, because I mean, that's when, once you figure out like the ins and outs of doing that, and then also you're building up equity in one house so that you can, I guess, use that as a down payment for another house, correct?
Yeah.
So it definitely kind of snowballs. I think Joe, you can add your thoughts. To me, what always held me back from doing that was I felt like if I'm going to spend $50,000 on a down payment, at least we're in this area or wherever, it could be $60,000, $70,000. I could take that and I could buy a website that will make me, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 a month. And you don't really see that return with a rental property, although you do have the advantages of, you know, the equity of the house going up.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think definitely to what Tiffany's talking about, it's like if you have a job and you're working that full-time job, and like, so I wanted to ask you about this actually. When did, like, was there a point where you realized that, like, when you were working your job, how much were you focused on saving as a percentage of your income, and how much of that was going into real estate and into the stock market? Like, it must have been a pretty high percentage.
It probably was. And I should look at my numbers, because I don't actually know what the percentage was. But I would say less well, less than half, but maybe like 30 to 40%. Gotcha. I should go back and look.
So you weren't like budgeting or anything, like you didn't have like a strict budget. You were just kind of like naturally saving.
Yeah, that's my natural tendency. And I do have a budget, but it's more just kind of keeping me on track. I'm not like, oh, I can only spend this or this or this. I kind of just look at it and think, oh, okay, I kind of need to adjust here. But
yeah, you always hear like the guys like Dave Ramsey, like they're so, you know, dead set on the budget. Like you got to have a budget and you better stick to the budget religiously or you're going to get into trouble and, you know, don't use credit cards and things like that. So I don't know, kind of forgot where I was going with this, but I did wanted to ask if you had a budget, because I think what Mike was saying to what we do, if you want to actually go all in to the stuff that we're doing, which is obviously what we recommend, I think it is a bit harder, like technically speaking, like you really have to dedicate yourself to learning new skills and all that, and like actually putting the time in, experimenting, you know, building websites, testing things on Google. Whereas with the way that you did it, which is, I mean, totally about not like putting it, you know, saying either one's better, that the way you did it is just kind of just more straightforward. It's like, you have this much money, you know, you make this much extra money, you put it towards this, you put it towards this. And then because you're investing it and it compounds, you end up wealthy. So I think that's really the major difference. And I guess I was actually on the same path that you were on, but it was kind of funny. I used to read this blog called Mr. Money Mustache. I don't know, have you ever heard of him?
Yeah, I've heard this blog.
Yeah, so that's how I got started. That's how I actually got started in online business in the first place, was because I read his blog, and then it turned me on. And then I ended up listening to this interview on Pat Flynn's blog with someone who sold like groceries on Amazon back in 2014. And that's how I got started. But it kind of evolved into something where I was like super budget conscious back then. And I still think I do have that natural tendency, but now I kind of look at my time as more of a valuable asset than, oh, if I want to like get this, like for example, I just ordered like groceries today, because I feel like going to the store and spending like, you know, it could be 2 hours by the time you go there, you shop, you get back. I feel like it was worth me spending like 10 extra dollars to get the grocery, because I know I can make more than $10 an hour. So how do you view all that with like your, do you consider like your return on time and some, like, did you consider that throughout your journey at all?
I feel like I kind of thought about that a little bit later. When I was working my 9-to-5, I was completely fine just going into work, getting my paycheck, calling it good. And then over time, as I started doing more research and seeing how other people were being successful, I started to think, oh yeah, my time is really valuable. And that is part of why I started, you know, making my money work for me and investing in real estate and the stock market and my own business. So it definitely makes a difference when you have that mindset of, yeah, your time is valuable and you should, you know, spend it the way that would be best for you. And that's another thing, like, you know, depending on if you have interest in real estate, you know, then you can definitely go that path. But if that's not your interest, like, you know, you can do things that you guys are doing, starting your own online businesses. So there's just different options, and they work if you want them to work, I guess. Kind of depends, you know, on what you're interested in doing and how you want to spend your time.
Yeah, I think we can all agree, and Mike, you could chime in if you disagree. I think real estate is definitely probably the holy grail of all of this. And that's what our accountant echoes that sentiment for sure. All his billion-dollar clients, he's, you know, they're all in real estate because of all the tax, you know, benefits you get, and you get the depreciation, you know, you get to write off the interest rate. It's just so beneficial to be into real estate. But yeah, it is just a matter of, I think, getting that extra money each month or each year to reinvest, and how you want to go about getting that extra money. I think that's the only difference. But ultimately, I think you want to end up in real estate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree, but I think, I mean, so Tiffany, we also buy and sell land. So it's a bit different. I mean, it's real estate, but it's not necessarily for the equity to go up and all this stuff. We're just kind of doing it to, we're just flipping it immediately and making profit that way. So I do agree that real estate in the end is probably the best place to have a lot of your equity, because it'll continue to go up. You get the tax advantages of, you know, the depreciation, and then also, you know, you can get the cash flow from a renter. But to me, my dilemma with it was I didn't feel like I'd be able to, it would have been too cash heavy upfront and not enough return on my investments quickly for me to get where I wanted to go. And that was to have, you know, just a lot of money in the bank and be at a place where, you know, I could buy a house, I can, you know, just up my earnings. So I think with real estate, you can definitely do that over time, but the more cash you have starting going into real estate, the better.
Well, I think this begs the question, Tiffany, where you live, because Mike was explaining, we live in New Jersey. And if we say we were going to invest in a rental property. So our cousin Jared got a rental property in, where do you get it, Mike? I forgot.
It's like Cleveland, Ohio.
Ohio. And it's like $100,000 property. And so he had to put $20,000 down. It's like, if we wanted to do that in New Jersey, like I don't even know like the type of how, like what we would get. Like we wouldn't, it would be like a rock or something. So where you live, what's kind of the barrier to entry to getting a rental property in Utah?
Yeah. So, and just to go along with that, my first rental property was just over $100,000. And it's, you know, it's a two bedroom, two bath condo. So not a huge place, but in a nice location and, you know, big enough or whatever. So yeah, depending on where you're investing in real estate, it can be really tricky. So you may have to go out of state. And yeah, housing prices have gone up a lot the past few years in Utah, and probably, you know, the most other places too. But you know, you can still find decent places, even if it is, you know, a two bedroom condo or something, you know, for 200,000 or just over 200,000. So prices are a lot lower here than New Jersey. So yeah, getting into real estate could be an option if you want to look out of state, if you live in an expensive place.
So sure. If you were advising a new person, would you, and you're telling them to either do stocks or real estate, would that be location dependent, or would you tell them you get into real estate, just go to a different state?
If they have interest in getting into real estate, then I would say you could look in a different state and figure out the process on how to do that. But if they're just looking to keep it very simple, then the stock market is very simple, and you can still make good returns in the stock market. So it kind of depends, you know, on which path they want to get into in the beginning.
Yeah. Again, to me, you know, it's a great place to put your money. I just don't think it's a great place to generate money in a big way, because if you're making, you know, you're only making $2,000 a month, like at a job or something, $4,000 a month, it's going to take a long time for you to build up even say $20,000 in your bank account to make that down payment. And so our cousin, for example, he's actually from New York. So he did it. He didn't live in that area. So he bought this house. I don't know how much he's making on it. But like, he hasn't even had it for a year, and he's had so many issues with it already. Like one of his tenants, like fell through the floor, you know, like one of them wasn't paying, they had to kick him out. So I think there's this, misconception. I sound like my dad almost, that, you know, it's, there's this misconception that doing real estate is super passive, but I mean, sometimes it's not. And to be doing that, to spend $20,000 and get maybe $1,000 a month back, like best case scenario, that's still not going to put someone in a position to be financially free. So
well, how is
what
he,
do you think about
how
that?
How is he wrong about that? I feel like he's wrong about that, because obviously it worked for you. Did it have to, you mentioned you were single. Do you think it had to do with the fact that, you know, you were single, maybe you didn't have a bunch of other expenses. So why is he wrong about that? I want to know.
Well, I mean, it's kind of that snowball effect. I think it was easier because I was single, so I could easily put roommates, you know, in there, and live with those people and, you know, instantly start creating extra income that way. And then being able to move again without moving a whole family. But you know, once you get started, and then if you can just continue to do that over time. And I have a friend that's done this, and he has bought a ton of different properties, and has been really successful with them. Just, I don't know, just because of that snowball effect, like you just get started creating that income, and then it just, you can buy another property and another. And then the value goes up over time and you pay them off and then you have even more cash flow.
Yeah. So like with my rental property, and I think this is where maybe it with my rental property, it doesn't really seem like, I think I make like $400 a month from it, like in terms of money into my bank account, but, and we have a property manager and everything. And it doesn't really seem like a lot of money. Like at the end of the day, at the end of the month, I'm like, oh, all this for not even all this. I don't really do anything, but you know, it's just what am I holding this for? Just to get this $400 extra a month. But I guess when you really think about it, if you're doing things the way you're doing it, that $400 a month, that's just what I'm getting. There's also the part that's paying into the equity of the house. And then if you're going and you're doing, if you were doing the house hack, that's what it's called, house hacking, right? Where you have the roommates and then you move. I guess
I think that's a great idea, by the way.
Yeah.
Continue, Joe.
Yeah, I guess I could see how it could snowball over time from that if you keep going with that. But so do you ever worry about being over leveraged if you're using the equity from one house to put a down payment on another house? And because when people have talked about that to me in the past, I guess that's where I was in the same kind of similar mindset to Mike, was like, I have my one rental property, but like, I don't want to get another one. Cause then I'm going to have, even if I put 50% down, I'll still have even more cash tied up. And, you know, say COVID hits again or something, and then, you know, there's no renter. Are you worried about being over leveraged? Like, how do you kind of work with that?
Yeah. So I don't feel like I'm over leveraged. When COVID hit, I know there was a lot of worry about that, but I don't know. I go into buying the properties like feeling comfortable with my payment and how much my renters will be able to pay. And then, you know, if they are able to pay for a while, that I'm able to cover that. So I don't know. I'm more safe that way. I feel like I don't like being over leveraged and having that stress. So I feel very comfortable with where my investments are. And, and I think that makes a big difference. Like you have to be comfortable with what you're invested in. If you're stressed out and you're over leveraged and just freaking out all the time, that's not healthy. And things could go wrong. You know, another COVID could hit and you could lose properties, but you just have to be careful in what you're doing and make sure that you feel okay with the investments and the numbers work out for you.
Where's the line between over leveraged and not over leveraged for you?
Well, that's a good question. I guess if I was like barely making enough, like maybe, I don't know, $1,000 extra or something a month, then I would feel over leveraged.
So you're getting more than $1,000 extra per property per month.
Total, like overall, I'm not getting an extra $1,000 per property. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel comfortable with where I'm at with my investments.
I think it also would come down to like how much money you have saved up elsewhere. So if something goes wrong, you can cover your bases for a certain amount of time. But so what was the, I don't know if they call it like the FIRE number that you had to hit monthly for you to actually be financially free?
I guess, I don't know. It's like hard to say because the number of passive income, I guess, extra, like $3,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. So at $3,000 a month, that's enough to cover your expenses, your bills. And so anything you make extra after that is just icing on the cake.
Oh, so, okay. So the $3,000 would be extra. So probably because more like $5,000 a month. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just trying to ask what the number was that you were trying to hit to where you said, okay, I'm making enough income from the rental properties that it's covering all my bills and, you know, enough that I feel comfortable that I can declare myself financially free.
Yeah, so $5,000.
Around $5,000? Okay, cool.
Right, so yeah, I want to kind of stay focused on the topic at hand. So when we were talking about this, I wanted to get the stream talk about the stock market, which I knew we were going to kind of go off track a little bit because we always do. So other than what we've talked about, you know, someone's making a little bit extra income. It's going to either, you either have to start making extra income by generating it on the side, away from your regular job, or by budgeting and saving properly. But if they are making extra income, like, and they want to get started with the stock market, so first of all, what's a good company that they can start with? Would you recommend like something like Vanguard or something else? And also, like, do you have specific percentages that they should try and reach? Like what's a good number to put in every month? Like, if you, what's a good way to project out what you have to hit to retire based on how much you want to put in? Does that make sense? Like, how can someone like budget for them, like set out a goal to actually do the FIRE thing to retire early?
Yeah. So I love Vanguard. That's who I have my Roth IRA with, and a traditional IRA too. So I would, recommend setting up an account with Vanguard, and they can set up a Roth IRA to get started with, unless they're making, I forget what the number is, but it's over $100,000 a year. But they can just, get started with that and then invest in an index fund, like we talked about, like the total stock market index fund. And then as far as percentages, the way I like to look at investing is, if you have your emergency fund fully funded, whatever that number is for you, whatever you feel comfortable with, some people recommend 3 to 6 months, a year, whatever. But just, pick that emergency fund number. Once you have that amount, and then you know what your expenses are, anything extra can be invested. So whether that's just 1% or 10%, but you want to be investing as much as you possibly can, as often as you can, and as early as you can, just so that you can take advantage of that compound interest over time. So the younger you are and the more you're investing, the more that's going to build over time and the less money you'll actually have to put in. So that's what I would recommend. Just, once you have your emergency fund set up, you know your expenses, anything extra can be invested. And then, as far as like the FIRE community, so you would take your annual expenses and you would multiply that by 25. And then whatever that number is, that would be the amount that you would have invested, not just sitting in a savings account, but actually invested. And then you could essentially retire or become financially free and live off of those investments.
So say
that's the 4% rule, right?
Yeah, the 4% rule.
So if you needed $5,000 a month, you multiply it by 25. Oh, sorry. You have to multiply 5,000 by 12.
60,000.
And then multiply that by 25. And so you need about 1.5 million. If you're doing this mix of stocks and real estate, in your case, if you're making enough money from your rental properties, you're not touching your stocks at all. I guess you're not like, isn't with FIRE, you're kind of like withdrawing. I always thought it was specifically from index funds. Is that not the case? Like, and you withdraw 4% of that?
That's the typical example. So if you are invested in just index funds, then you would be taking out 4% every year, essentially, from those index funds. And, if you had individual stocks mixed in with that, then you could sell off, a few shares, depending on what stock you're invested in. And then, if you have an index fund as well, then you could take out some of the index funds. So you could kind of mix it if you have mixed investments. And then as far as with real estate, so if you have real estate or even passive income from a business that you've created, then any passive income or cash flow that you have coming in, you can subtract that from your expenses, your annual expenses. So then you wouldn't have to have as much money invested because you already have passive income coming in. So you wouldn't have to withdraw as much money from your investments, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. And I know you had something to ask, Mike, but I think this is important to kind of wrap up the topic of the stock market. Now, I have a lot invested in retirement accounts just because at the end of the year, what happens is, you want to save on taxes. So we end up I max out the Roth IRA, the SEP IRA, and it just depends. Whatever my accountant says, the Roth IRA is not, I don't really save that year, obviously. But max out those two. So what ends up happening is a lot of my investments end up being in these retirement funds where I can't touch them till I'm 65. And I feel like I have too much in there right now. So how does that get factored into the whole FIRE situation? Like, can someone withdraw from the retirement funds? Like, and I know from the Roth, you can withdraw just the initial investment, right? Without touching what you've gained. So can you break that down?
Yeah. So if you are retiring early, you can withdraw your contributions that you have made to your Roth IRA. So any interest that you've earned, you can't withdraw that without a penalty. And that's why I also have a brokerage account set up. So you can withdraw money anytime at any time from a brokerage account without any penalty. And yes, you will pay taxes on that money that's invested in your brokerage account. But if you hold those investments for at least a year, then you'll pay less money in taxes when you cash those investments out. So if you are looking to retire early, that could be a good route. You could take some of your money and put it in a Roth IRA and in a brokerage account if you wanted to pull that money out before retirement age. And there are a few other things you can do with retirement accounts, or if you really needed to, you could pull that money out and pay the penalty. That's not ideal, but it could be an option still.
Cool. So, John, I don't know. I'm going to ask something off topic, so I don't know if you want to say anything else.
Hold the off-topic question. Let's try and stay.
It's not a terribly off-topic, but
all right, ask it.
Well, I was going to say, as a retiree, what do you do all day?
I work on my business. So my YouTube channel that I have, I work on creating free content on there, and then I do one-on-one sessions with people, helping them to become better with their money and learn to invest it, Yeah, I'm just trying to build that up over time. So I find that really fun. I like talking about investing and helping mm-hmm. people do that. And then I also like to travel. I've taken quite a few vacations this year, just kind of local since, you know, COVID and all. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like to travel and just, yeah, spend time like with my little niece or nephew or, yeah, whatever's going on.
Do you set an alarm clock?
No, I don't set an alarm clock. I go to a Zumba class too. I like Zumba.
Nice.
So how many hours would you say you work a week?
It kind of depends. Maybe around like 25 to 30 hours.
Okay. So this question wasn't totally off topic and unrelated. I was asking this to kind of bring it back to the point of, so, you know, you've been able to cover your expenses through the investments and the real estate and the stocks. And so, but you're still choosing to run a business that I'm presuming makes you money, and you're still putting you're putting a good amount of time into that per month, per week.
Yeah.
So like in my opinion, I think, you know, you're still, people need stuff to do still. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know if Joe and I are in a situation where we can just straight up retire right now. I don't think we're there yet based on, you know, all the things that we have, like the websites bringing us.
Like if we were to just we're selling everything. That's it. I think.
Well, no, not even selling everything. I think if we sold everything, we could be close. But I'm saying if we just said, I'm not going to do anything, I'm just going to let, you know, whatever's coming in, come in. Could we live retired?
Would we still do this? Like, would we still do anything?
Would we need to do anything? I'm trying to define retirement. Because now you have me thinking, Tiffany has me thinking, like, How far away am I from retirement? Am I retired right now? Because to me, retirement, I've always viewed it as, you know, Joe and I have talked about, like we've talked about the 4% rule, right? So I want 3 million, 4 million, have that in an index fund. Now I can say, you know, we have these online businesses, they're bringing us money, whatever. Even if those fall off a cliff tomorrow, everything is still totally covered just through that. So that's my idea of it. And so I guess you have a similar approach where, you know, you don't need your business, but it's still something for you to do.
Yeah.
So what are you going to say, Joe?
No, we're getting so on that topic, Tiffany, I always think this is interesting and we do like to address this stuff. You know, we on the show, we're kind of let the conversation evolve naturally. You know, we kind of got into this, you know, Mike was kind of, I guess, not didn't fully understand. So, you know, he has a different view of things. So we like to keep it a little open. And we have some criticisms in the chat that we like to address. And so obviously don't take this personally. So okay. I don't know who this viewer is either. So I don't like Lena Morgan says, where was it? Was the comment deleted?
Alex is moderating.
Okay. Lena said, love when people say, I am retired, but I am selling courses, coaching, working on my business. LOL for me, retiring is doing shit. Sell everything, open an OnlyFans and call it retire. Lena Morgan is also criticizing you for not telling anything new. But the whole point, the reason why I wanted to have Tiffany on the show is because this stuff at the end of the day is pretty basic. Like it's pretty straight arithmetic. You're just investing a certain amount of the extra money that you make. And like you said, I mean, you broke down the formula pretty simply is you just multiply your yearly expenses by 25 and then you withdraw 4% of that. And what I guess the part that you would need to work out personally is how much you want to put into retirement, how much you want to put into brokerage accounts, how much you want to put into real estate and how you're going to withdraw that. But at the end of the day, it's what you're saying is straightforward and there is no, of course, there's no secret or anything new if you already know this stuff to what you're telling us, because that's just what it is. But believe it or not, a lot of people don't realize this. And a lot of our students, I think, you know, don't realize this because everyone's got gaps in their knowledge. Like I got into online business after I kind of was knowledgeable about what you're talking about, but not everyone has that. So, but what I wanted to ask you was, you know, why do you do this stuff? Like, why do you like continue to work on your business and, you know, work 25 hours a week if you're retired?
Because I love it. And that's the thing, like people just think retired is, okay, let's go lay on the beach and whatever, I don't know. But retired to me means I get to do what I want when I want to do it. So I work on my business at like 11 o'clock at night sometimes if I want to, or, you know, like, I don't know, I have the freedom to do what I want and this is what I'm passionate about. So that's what I'm going to spend my time doing. And I have the freedom to do that. I don't have to go to a 9-to-5 that I don't enjoy. Or if I did enjoy a 9-to-5, then I would still go to a 9-to-5, but it's my choice. And that's what financial freedom brings, you know, choices, options. You get to decide for yourself what you want to spend your time on.
Yeah, exactly. And people ask us that too. Like, oh, why are you doing this and selling courses if you make so much money doing all this other stuff? But yeah, I think like if you just did nothing, then you would be so bored after 2 months.
Right.
Well, I also think
I agree.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Jeff?
Go ahead, Tiffany. I'll say what I was going to say after.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, when you retire, you get to choose what you want to be doing and you can pursue your passions. And just doing nothing isn't, I don't know, it's not fun. It's not helping you grow or improve or become better. And that's what I like. I like a little challenge in my life. And, you know, building a business is challenging for me. So I like that and just learning new things and continuing to grow. So go ahead, John.
Yeah, no, I think in many ways we're in, I don't know, someone talked about this, some guy who wrote a book, but we're in like a knowledge economy of sorts where machines and computers can do a lot of the manual tasks that need to be done. But in order to, I guess, you know, get ahead in this type of economy, it's about your knowledge. And so, you know, it's not like you sharing the knowledge like hurts other people. I think you can actually make the argument that you sharing the knowledge and getting other people to, you know, take investing seriously, even if they're not paying you, actually helps you in a way, because I guess the more people invest in real estate, and this is a very macro view of things, the more people invest in real estate and develop real estate, the more people invest in the stock market and do that stuff, will help those things grow and increase, you know, either the value of those companies or housing prices in a certain area. And I don't know if that tangent makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you are plugging, you know, or pulling your, I guess, in the U.S. economy, you can say you're doing your part to get the economy boosted, and that in turn helps you because you're invested in the economy, right?
Yeah. And I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And also there's also a distinction in the idea of being financially free and being retired, because you have a set amount of expenses for like where you want to be. So that's how you want to live. So that's for you, $5,000 a month. But for someone like, you know, someone who's a dentist and they make, you know, X million per year, for them to retire, their expenses are going to be way higher than that. And so on the other end, you know, there's people in the online business community that say, screw all that, get an online business that's going to make you a few thousand dollars a month, even $5,000 a month, go to Puerto Rico or go to Thailand, go to Bali. You're not, then, you know, you can skirt taxes and live extremely cheaply and boom, you're retired that way. So I think that the idea of it, it looks very, there's a lot of different ways that it can show up, and you have to tailor it to what you want your life to be.
Exactly.
I think while, you know, we could pull off the, you know, going to a third world country and retiring there, but I think our goal right now is to, like, I want to increase my status here.
I guess I want to live the same lifestyle that I guess grew up with, but fully financially, without the working part. But I don't know. I keep losing my train of thought, actually. What were we talking about? I was going to ask Tiffany a question, but anyway.
I don't know. Let's see what's going on. Well, Lena fell back, and she was thankful that we addressed her questions. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I think people have this common misconception that, like, once you figure something out, that you should just do it and shut up about it and, like, don't do anything else, because that would truly mean that, you know, you're doing something that works. But in the end, there's always things, like, it's always fun to give back, and, you know, doing so can generate you positive income, and it helps. And like you said, it's, I don't, to me, I feel like I have to be challenging myself, you know, at least on a weekly basis. So I wouldn't be happy if I wasn't doing something like that. Would I want to work less hours in a couple of years? Probably. But there's always that part of me that, you know, I feel like you have to be pushing the edges of what you feel like you can do.
Tiffany, in your time coaching people, because again, the comments, some of the comments are just saying like, oh, this, you know, stuff is so basic or whatever. But in your time coaching people, because you see this stuff in the media happen, and like you hear about it, you hear about sports stars and people that are super rich. Mike brought up a dentist, and these people can be making a ton of money and like actually be pretty poor because their lifestyle is so inflated that they just, if their dental practice were to burn down, or, you know, they get an injury or it's not in their contract, you know, they would be broke the next day. And you hear a lot of sports stars go bankrupt. So do you, in your practice, anyway, when you coach people, do you ever end up coaching people that actually like are what people might consider wealthy and making a lot more money than even you make?
No, I haven't like done super wealthy people. So yeah, I've had people like around what I'm making. But yeah, you're right. Like that lifestyle inflation happens a lot. And yeah, you know, we can see that in the news, and people don't understand the basic concepts. A lot of people don't. And that's what I'm trying to do, is help educate people about those concepts, because they are pretty simple. If you can just follow them, right? And not do the lifestyle inflation, if you can actually, you know, keep your expenses where they are when you get a raise, and invest that extra money. I think people constantly need to be reminded, or even need to be taught if they haven't been taught that, just because a lot of people don't know those basic concepts. So it's just so important to give that education.
It is easy to let it slip. I mean, especially like, it's, I find myself doing stuff now where, well, but it's a balance though. Cause like I said, you're talking about, you know, valuing your time, you know, versus valuing your money. And it is a difficult balancing act, but yeah, I think it is easy to let it slip if you get a raise. Oh, hey, honey, let's go out on the town, you know, let's do this, let's do that, let's get a new car. So yeah, that stuff is very important.
Yeah. to me, that's why I like the online business stuff, because I think it allows you to create more of, it allows you to increase your expenses potentially, because you can also increase your income so drastically. So to me, yeah, like, I think there's definitely a spectrum between like what Joe is comfortable with. You know, I think Joe would get by spending a lot less money than say me, but then there's also our cousin who does the same thing, who would say like he wants, you know, all the, he wants the mansion, the Lamborghini, like all that stuff. And I would say I'm somewhere in between, but you know, a lot of our listeners, we teach people how to do the online business, how to get the cash flow, how to get, you know, big cash out selling websites. But the basics of what to do after that are really all you need. And even myself, like I'm aware of the 4% rule, all the stuff we talked about here, but I really, you know, sometimes I let it slip and I don't think about it and plan for it, I think, as much as I should. So yeah, there's no secrets with this stuff. It's just invest in assets, hopefully have those assets, you know, bring you money, and just keep going from there. So
yeah. All right. We're coming to the hour mark, so we usually end the show here, but I guess we usually do also read the comments as well. See if anyone has any questions, if you or whatever. Alex says day traders are gamblers. Companies don't grow within hours. So how can you accurately expect a stock to increase value within hours? I think you would agree with that, Tiffany, for the most part.
Yeah.
Ron Koch says, what do you think of Bitcoin?
I haven't studied that much about Bitcoin. It's not where I want to be putting my money. I like real estate and the stock market.
Right. And I think I always thought that made more sense. I mean, I don't really, my knowledge of cryptocurrencies isn't that deep. I kind of like the concept behind it of the blockchain and everything, but I always thought it was a safer bet to be putting, because at the end of the day, money is not real. The cash in your bank account, the fake Federal Reserve notes are not real. What's real is the wealth that they could purchase. So even a stock is more real than the money in your bank account. A piece of property is more real than the money in your bank account, and the money is just a reflection of what you can buy. So stuff like Bitcoin, I think, while I'm sure you can make a ton of money with cryptocurrencies, I feel like it's a hit or miss and not like a stable thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. We've gotten into why, you know, that type of way of generating income is not a good idea versus, you know, something like an online business.
Yeah.
And then what do we have after that? Some Bitcoin spammer. Alex said, I started with index funds, but realized I'm too young to be that diversified.
I think that's,
so, I mean,
that's not correct, right, Tiffany? I mean, the younger you start, the better.
Yeah. So he can definitely do an index fund and just do one that invests only in the stocks part of the market. So nothing in bonds. And that would still be risky enough.
Yeah. I think what he was getting at was, I don't know if he meant like he's taking his money out of his index funds now, but he felt like there was something he could be putting his money into to generate a better return and something more high risk, maybe considering how young he is.
I think that's a bad approach. I think that's a bad approach.
Something high risk could be like a business, you know, instead of putting the 10,000 into index funds, you can use it to start a blog or whatever. So
yeah.
I wouldn't say I disagree with that.
Yeah.
We have Lena talking smack. Skip that.
Is this your first live stream? Like, do you ever do live streams, Tiffany?
I just did one, last week? Okay. And I've done a couple of podcasts before that, but this is my second, like, YouTube live stream.
Sorry, the live, I should have maybe warned you, the live streams usually get a little crazy with the chat and everything.
Good to know.
It's all good, though. No, it's fine. Anthony Spencer said, with the rental house game, you have to look at it like you're buying an asset and someone else is paying it off. The extra profit you're getting every month is small potatoes compared to the value of the house doubling or tripling. So absolutely. My one qualm was that you can't live off of that equity necessarily, especially within the first 5 or 10 years. So I'm coming at it from the approach of someone needs to get out of their job and pay for their expenses and then some through other means. And then after that, the rental stuff can come later.
On that point, Mike, so Tiffany, do you try and pay down your properties early? Like get the, like, so when you have extra income, when you were at your job or whatever, did you try and roll it into your rental properties to pay off the mortgage faster or no?
So I didn't at first because I wanted to buy more properties. Mm-hmm. But now I'm comfortable with the amount of properties that I have now. So now, yeah, I actually paid off one of my mortgages recently.
Okay.
But so yeah, that's what your goals are.
Yeah.
Like then you may want to save that to invest in another property.
So that's an important part of this, of the snowball process that you're talking about, I guess, is getting to this critical mass of properties that you would say, okay, I need this many, the rent from this many properties to fund my lifestyle. And once you get that many properties, I guess that's the balance of not being over leveraged, correct? Is like you get that and then you start investing that into paying off the mortgages on the properties rather than getting more properties at that point and just it, you know, it getting out of control, you could say, by never paying down any of the debt.
Right. That's exactly how I'm doing it.
Cool. Yeah, I would like
to buy houses in cash and just start by buying a house in cash, like $300,000. And then that way you're getting, to me, that feels like the best of both worlds because you get the most amount of cash flow. There's no leverage. And then, you know, you can go and use that to buy another house.
You would love Dave Ramsey, Mike. That's what Dave Ramsey recommends.
Well, I wouldn't love Dave Ramsey because we spend too much in credit cards, Joe.
That's true.
several million in credit card.
What are your thoughts on credit cards, Tiffany?
I think they are a great tool to use if you can handle them. If you can't handle them, like if you can't pay them off in full every month, then I would say don't use them. But otherwise, I feel like they're a great tool. Because you can have the reward points, you have that 30 days to do whatever you want with that money. So there's lots of benefits to using credit cards as long as you can use them in the best way possible.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as with anything, you have to be responsible. And so we obviously, you know, we pay off all of our credit cards. I'm talking mainly business credit cards because we do so much in advertising and they're paying for like products and stuff like that, that it winds up being, you know, many, many millions a year. So I don't know how Dave Ramsey would feel about that. But yes, the points, the rewards, I don't even like talking about it because I feel like...
Yeah, we won't talk about it.
Yeah. It's top secret.
Moving on. All right. Well, I think we've kind of reached the end of the chat. I think the chat is kind of talking amongst itself now. I don't want to take any more Tiffany's time. I appreciate you being on the show. Leverage is the key to returns in investment in real estate. Anyway, I don't want to drag this on any longer. I feel like, you know, we've taken him up, you know, it's over the hour. So gotta go. But
I got a hard stop anyway. Yeah.
So Tiffany
probably doesn't because she's retired, so she doesn't have anywhere to be.
I'm good, whatever.
So Tiffany, where can people find you? I put some links in the YouTube description for people to check out. So just let people know like what to Google, give a little bit more about what you do. So if people are seeking out that specific thing.
Yeah, you can find me on my website, wealthytiffany.com. And you can find my one-on-one sessions on there. And then I have a couple courses, how to buy your first stock and a budgeting course. And then also on YouTube, Tiffany Thomas, your wealth mentor. And I'm on other social media, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. And you can type in Wealthy Tiffany and I should pop up. So yeah, you guys, thanks so much for having me. Honestly, this was super fun. I love doing it.
Thank you, Tiffany. It was fun for us.
Thanks for coming on.
Oh, you have an ebook also, right? Or you have a book on Amazon.
Yes, I have a book. Yeah, Financial Freedom for Females. So check out my book.
Hey, can I still read it? Or?
Of course, yes. It applies to guys as well. It really does. I even say that in the description. But yeah, check that out.
Cool. Well, thank you, Tiffany, for coming on. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And so we'll be exiting the stream now. Tiffany, you can hang on after that. But yeah. Take it easy.
Thanks for listening to the Build Assets Online podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, don't forget, subscribe, share, and leave us a rating on whatever platform you might be listening from. And if you're ready to learn how to build your own online business portfolio, start now by visiting buildassetsonline.com/playbook. We'll see you in the next episode.